I'm going to start this morning with a quote from Dr. Ernest Holmes, who is the founder of this movement. Ernest Holmes said, "I live in the faith that there is a presence and a power greater than I am that nurtures and supports me in ways I could not even imagine." Amen. There is a presence and a power that nurtures and supports me in ways greater than I can imagine. How about that? Do you believe it?
Yes.
Okay, good. Good. This is priceless. This power and this presence is priceless. And this talk this morning is about calling in the personal priceless divine. The personal priceless divine. And Peter Piper picked a peck of priceless pickled peppers. And then he got prayer from a practitioner. So there's a story that one of my friends that I met in India told me. This guy's name is Myron, and he lives in the faraway land of Wisconsin. And he travels all over the world and does peacemaking activities. He works with Syrian refugees, and he tries to get Republicans and Democrats to talk to each other. And he goes to the Middle East, and he tries to get the warring sides over there to talk to each other. He was flying someplace, and it was not a good day for flying. Have you ever had that experience when you've been stuck in the airport and the weather is horrible and everybody's grumpy and you go to buy something and there's a huge line of disgruntled, wet, nasty people that are just wreaking havoc, right? Anybody have that experience, right? Anyway, so my friend Myron was in the line and he was standing behind a slight in stature Vietnamese man. And the man got up to the register. And as he turned profile, my friend Myron said, "Oh my goodness, that's Thich Nhat Hanh." He was standing in line behind Thich Nhat Hanh. And then Thich Nhat Hanh said something that changed the energy of the entire room. He said magical words, and the weight was lifted, and everybody started feeling good. Do you want to hear what he said?
Yes.
Okay. He said, "I'd like to buy some gum, please." I am serious. My friend Myron told me that he said those words, "I'd like to buy some gum, please," but the way that he said it, something rippled out from him and everybody instantly became calm. I know. So that's all I got for you today. Go anyplace and say, "That must be the secret to happiness, is I'd like to buy some gum, please." All right? Or is it? It may have been that Thich Nhat Hanh was so poised and practicing so deeply that he was impervious to the external conditions. How about that? He was not disgruntled or disemboweled, I was going to say, by the anger and the disappointment surrounding him. I would suspect that he was practicing radical gratitude for just being there, for living in a world where there is gum. It's so exciting for being there. And also, he was practicing compassion and unconditional love and wisdom, the wisdom of understanding that when a plane is delayed, maybe it's for a good reason, because everything is working in harmony. The universe is working in harmony. This power and this presence that supports us in ways beyond which we can imagine sometimes shows up in ways that our smaller self finds unfortunate. But what if Thich Nhat Hanh and me and all of you are correct in saying that everything works in harmony? That is priceless information for us. Compassion is priceless. Wisdom is priceless. The idea that everything works in harmony is priceless. Gratitude is priceless. So today we're just going to learn some skills. We're going to work together to just work with some concepts that will help us have that Thich Nhat Hanh, "I want to buy some gum" experience all the time. That experience of being able to walk into a room and just shift it with your energy. The experience of shifting yourself when things are going crazy around you. That beautiful, beautiful, priceless energy that we all have. Because I believe, and I hope you believe this too, that Thich Nhat Hanh doesn't have anything that we don't have. There's as much God or love or peace or poise in Thich Nhat Hanh as there is in any of us. It's just that certain people have developed it or practice it constantly. And that's really what it takes, is practice. So we're going to talk about practicing today. Many of you know, particularly if you're on Facebook, that I went to Utah last weekend. Gina was here doing a great job, I heard, and I went to Utah to do a seminar, to teach a seminar at one of the Science of Mind conferences, and it was lovely. small and intimate and kind of a very introspective energy, which I really liked. I did my worthiness curriculum. Some of you have taken the worthiness class, or I wrote a blog on worthiness, and I did part of that in two separate workshops that were two repeated workshops. I didn't think anybody was come because I didn't really feel worthy, but poor Annette was begging me, please let me make you some more handouts, and sure enough, I ran out of handouts on the first day. So a lot of people came, and it was really, it was wonderful. It was wonderful to share this information and realize what a weirdo we are in this church. I mean, collectively, you know, that in other churches, they don't really talk a lot about embracing your darkness or touching your elbow to understand absolute reality. Probably some of you are new and you don't know what I'm talking about, but we may get there today, who knows. Or if not, come back and you'll find out why we touch our elbow. How's that? Okay? So anyway, one of the things that I asked them to do was, first of all, we talked about grace, because grace is a precursor of gratitude, right? Grace and gratitude work together really beautifully. And gratitude is priceless, and grace is priceless. Priceless is kind of the definition of grace, really. You know, we talked about what is the definition of grace. Ernest Holmes said that it is the constant givingness of spirit. I would call it the unconditional givingness of spirit, that we've all been given all of these things that we have done nothing to earn. And yet we struggle with that. We struggle with the idea that we can receive all of the stuff, that we have all of this stuff. You know, God cannot give us anything because God has already given us everything, Joel Goldsmith. We have all of this stuff available to us, but we think that we don't deserve it or we haven't earned it because we are hypnotized by what Richard Rohr calls the meritocracy, that we need to earn what we have. But the truth is, if we go a little bit deeper, we can see that we have so much that we haven't done anything to earn. One of my friends who lost his home in the fires was talking about how after the fires, he couldn't smell anything. Now that can be a blessing in its own way, but he couldn't smell. Like somebody would bring him a bunch of basil and he'd be like, oh, what's wrong with this? It doesn't smell right. And came to find out that it wasn't that there was something wrong with the herbs that people were bringing him. There was something going on with his sinuses. And when he got his sense of smell back after several months, he was so delighted to have his sense of smell back. And did he earn a sense of smell? Did you earn a sense of smell? Did you earn the right to sit in this beautiful building, this art that was created how many years ago, in the 20s, in the 30s? Did you earn consciousness? You know, I've heard that this friend told me that the fact that we are here in this body, not even to mention in this beautiful church surrounded by beautiful people and beautiful art and beautiful music, the fact that we are here is such a divine coincidence. You know, that it's like throwing a hula hoop into the ocean and coming up through the hula hoop. It's that rare and that special that we are here. And we did nothing to earn that. We did nothing to earn that. We just showed up, and we have all of the blessings and benefits of consciousness. We have all of these things, all of these little details in our lives that we haven't earned. We haven't earned the ocean. We haven't earned the trees, the mountains. We haven't earned sunsets. Has anybody here ever earned a sunset, right? You know, when I was teaching this class, somebody asked, he said, well, I'm starting to think that maybe I didn't earn anything. And there was an argument about that. People were like, well, you earned your degree, you earned your ministerial license, you earned this, you earned that. And yes, in the relative world, we do earn things, but in the absolute reality, everything is a perfect pattern that's unfolding, and we did nothing to earn that other than show up. So take a moment to recognize that is priceless, and you are part of that. And if you would, turn within for just a moment and think of one, two, three things that you have that you haven't earned. One to three blessings that you have that you did nothing to earn, that just showed up because you're here. And give thanks, and breathe in deeply, and exhale, and gently open your eyes. Can I hear some of those blessings?
My granddaughter.
Your granddaughter. What else? Your granddaughter. Okay. All right. Your dog, right?
Living in Ventura.
Spirituality. Mm-hmm.
My cat.
Your cat. Yeah. Anybody else?
My plants.
Your plants. Yes.
My breath.
Your breath. Yeah, your breath. So the ocean, yes. So many beautiful things that we haven't earned. You know? Pardon?
Adoption.
Uh-huh. Wonderful. Yes. The pink moment, yes. Do you know what that is? It's in Ojai, right? Mostly Ojai, right? Where the sun set and the mountains turn pink. So we could do this all day, which is tempting, actually. But I recommend, actually, that you do this all day. That throughout your day, particularly if you notice you're getting into a grumpy state or what have you, that you start to recognize all of the things that you have that are just given to you simply because you're here, simply because you exist. Tell you, it changes your attitude and it changes your world, because as you start seeing things that were given to you simply by grace, then you start seeing more things and more things and more things, and pretty soon you get to that place that the person in the workshop was, where you're like, I don't think I earned anything. I think all of this is given to me. And my biggest challenge, my biggest job, is simply to receive it, right? Grace's only condition is that we receive it. So will you receive grace today? There is a power and a presence within you that wants you to receive grace, that wants you to know how wonderful you are, that wants you to know how great your life is. If you receive that, then you get to experience that power and that presence in a fuller, greater way. And how wonderful is that, right? So I am pro-grace, just so you know. I am pro-receiving grace. And then grace comes sometimes in strange disguises. Has anyone here had something go wrong that was really something going right? Right? In hindsight? I know Garth Brooks did, because he wrote a song about that. Lonnie, didn't he? You know country music. He wrote a song about he's really happy that he didn't marry this hottie that he went to high school with, right? Yeah. So, anybody? No, I'm kidding. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that I've been pondering as I've been thinking about this topic of the priceless. You know, even the things that feel like adversity or challenges or problems or difficulties, even the things that cause us to be grumpy, even perhaps grumpiness itself, all of those things are gifts in disguise. Gifts in sometimes distressing disguises, but they are gifts in disguise, that they are a form of grace. And I want to say that there is no exception. You know, I am making exceptions in my mind. There are certain things that I can't see the gift in yet. But from teaching this seminar in Utah, there was one woman that had something that was so big that she just hated about herself, and she would not let go of hating herself. And I just kept telling her, there is a gift in that. There is a gift in this thing that you can't stand about yourself, and I promise you, it is there. You just have to open to receive it. And that's true for every single person sitting in this room. If there's something that feels like it's too big, if there's something that feels like it's too much, if there's something that feels overwhelming, there is a gift in that. There's a gift in the little irritants. There's a gift in everything. We just open ourselves to receive it. You know, this is living unconditionally. So many of us want unconditional love. We want the universe to love us unconditionally, or at least to feel like it does. But if we are not loving life unconditionally, then life seems like it is not loving us unconditionally. You get that? You get what you receive. We're constantly circulating what we're putting out. And if we are loving life unconditionally, saying, life doesn't need to please me, life doesn't need to show up like I want it to, life is going to be life, and I am going to love everything. That is unconditional love, right? So take a moment and look at the conditions you are putting on your life, that life needs to look this way or else I cannot be happy. Take a moment to look at that. And then realize that somewhere in there is a gift in this thing that is showing up in a way that is not pleasing to your smaller self. You know, there was a minister at this conference that I really admired what he spoke about. He was completely unprepared, which I'm familiar with. Not today, actually, but sometimes. But he stood up and he talked about how he is reinventing his church. He is praying for disruption. And I realized that over the past year or so, going to India, rewriting foundations, making a lot of changes, getting bunny rabbits, you know, doing all kinds of things in this church, that we have been kind of on this trajectory of disruption. And I think it started when we changed the vision statement to being a center of love. Be love, share love, serve love. If you want to be a center of love, guess what? Things that are not lovely or lovable will come up in your life. Because it's easy to love the things that are easy to love. I mean, I know that's obvious, but it's easy to love the things that are easy to love. When you really start to grow hair on your chest, sorry for that, whatever, grow muscles, let's put it that way. I don't know where that came from, but when you really start to grow muscles is when the things that are difficult to love come up in your life and you find a way to love it anyway. You find a way to be unconditional. You don't have to like it. You don't have to be a doormat. It is loving to set boundaries. I'm talking about that in a couple of weeks. It is absolutely loving to set boundaries because sometimes not setting boundaries is a form of manipulation. Put that in your pipe and smoke on it, right? But if we can love what is as it is and so it is, then that empowers us to receive the priceless divine that is that thing that I spoke about in the beginning, that power and that presence that works through us in unimaginable ways, that is infinite, omnipresent. And as an omnipresent presence, it is in us always. So it's a powerful, powerful thing to pray for disruption and then love what arises. I'm praying for disruption right now. Yes, I am. Well, maybe not this right. Well, yeah, I can handle a little. Anybody want to disrupt me? Huh? Cheryl. Yeah. No, I mean, don't you feel that, you know, that the church is changing, that it's growing in deeper ways, in deeper, sweeter ways, and there is some disruption that is wanting to happen here. Something is wanting to evolve, and I don't know what it is yet. And it drives me crazy that I don't know what it is, but I know it's going to be wonderful as we become a force for good here in the world, here in Ventura, here rippling out all over the entire planet, the universe. I know that something is shifting, and I want that shift, and I am celebrating it. And I don't have to be afraid of it because I know that God is my silent partner. And the same thing is true for you as members of this community, and the same thing is true for you in your personal lives. If you're praying for disruption, might as well pray for disruption because disruption is going to happen anyway, right? Pray for the grace to be with disruption in a new way, knowing that God, love, whatever you want to call it, is your silent partner. This presence that goes with you always. That invites you to open your heart and be more than you ever thought you could be. You know, one of the disruptions that I've noticed in a more personal way is the disruption of a script, a story that we tell ourselves over and over again. I decided to disrupt a story. I think I told you right before I went to Utah that I had to write an article for this magazine, and I had to write my presentation for Utah. And I was freaking out and procrastinating and walking through the social hall like a baboon, clutching at things to distract me so I wouldn't have to get started. I actually put stress eat on my to-do list, you know? It's like, meet with this person, talk to Annette about such and such, stress eat. Maybe do a little writing, stress eat after that, etc. So I decided to take a closer look at fear because, you know, the reason I wasn't looking at fear was I was telling myself, you've done this for years. You've taught this material before. See how whiny that is? You've taught this material before. You shouldn't be afraid, loser, right? So I decided to take a closer look at my fear and just ask myself, being both the asker and the witness, what scares you about this? And then answer, what scares you about this? Oh, I feel like people are going to judge me. What scares you about this? Oh, I'm not like the other ministers in the movement. What scares you about this? Well, people are not going to understand me. What scares you about this? What is the problem with being judged, not being like the other ministers in the movement? And what it came down to after a good while of doing that was, okay, what scares you about this? It feels like you don't have a right to exist as you are and take up room on a stage or a page, which is an old song that I've been singing for years, and yet I still keep showing up, right? However, I decided to actually sing that song. Well, not actually sing it. I did not sing it, you know, like, you are a loser. Pointing at him. Well, I used to be, you know, I was a professional, but anyway. I just repeated it over and over again. And I have to tell you, the most delightful thing happened when I repeated that story over and over again. I got bored. It was boring. It was boring as cat poop, as my husband says. So he says it slightly differently. It was just boring. And so I started just saying to myself, well, what's a more interesting story? Oh, A more interesting story is there's a power and a presence that lives through me that wants to express in beautiful ways. And this power and this presence befriends your fear. It gives it a job. This power and this presence recognize that this fear is just like the little guy in The Wizard of Oz pulling levers, trying to make a huge head seem bigger than it is, right? This power and this presence just completely understands that. It laughs at it and it loves it. You know, it's sort of like having a rabbit who bites. This fear, you know? Our rabbits, Emma and Waldo, do not bite. They are very nice rabbits. However, my husband and I adopted a huge rabbit, a Flemish giant rabbit, and that little stinker bites. You know, but if you have a fearful voice, a biting rabbit in your head or in your consciousness, you're still going to love it. You're still going to love it. I still love Bigfoot. Bigfoot is our rabbit's name. I love him. I love him, and we're working with him to cut back on the biting behavior, right? We swaddle him when we carry him around, and it works much better, and it's going to be fine. So that's what I'm recommending for all of you. If you have an inner Bigfoot, an inner biting bunny, an inner voice of fear, look at it. Look at it. See what it's trying to tell you, and recognize how boring it is, and then choose something anew. But also, don't choose something, don't hurt the fear, or don't hate the fear. You know, that's how we get in trouble in this movement, is we try and push things down with affirmations, like these maniacal affirmations. We try and push things away. I am the living spirit of God. You know? Yeah, I am perfect, whole, and complete. Yeah. Sorry, did I spit on anybody? No, I'm perfect and imperfect, and I love both sides of it. I am dark, and I am light, and I love both sides of it. I am a biting bunny and a loving companion, and I love both sides of that aspect of myself. So it's that. It's recognizing, loving everything, being unconditional with ourselves as well. The last thing I want to say, and then we're going to hear a little opera from Michael, is I want to also recognize with you that we are engaged in something priceless here, and that there are other, many things in your life that are priceless, but specifically about here. You know, sometimes when you're part of a community and you're part of a spiritual community or part of a spiritual path, you don't recognize how much the little things matter. And it's up to us as spiritual seekers, as spiritual revolutionaries or spiritual evolutionaries to see that there is this, bless you, that there is this beautiful, beautiful effect that is happening in the world. So, for example, we started the concept of priceless pricing here for some of our classes, and now priceless pricing is in the Philippines, and I have friends in Turkey who are using it, and I have other friends in Portugal who are using it. And it's something that, and when I was at the workshop, you know, I had people doing what we do here, talking about darkness and light, touching their elbows, recognizing that perfection is... Many people did not know the definition of perfect, and you guys all know the definition of perfect, right? What does it mean? Inclusive of everything. Thank you. It means inclusive of everything. So that's rippling out to all of these ministers that I worked with at this seminar. And one of the most beautiful things was that I gave away 200 heart pins while I was there. I gave each person in the seminar one and one to give away, to remind others of their beauty and their worth and the personal, beautiful power, the priceless power that moves through each of them. And so I would walk down into the hotel lobby and I'd see people wearing heart pins from India. And I'm, you know, taking pictures and telling the women in India that their heart pins are rippling all over the country. But the thing is that it's not me that is doing this. It is us that is doing this. Your presence here matters. From the prophet Joni Mitchell, part of you pours out of me in these lines from time to time. Part of you pours out of me in these words that I say, in the things that I teach, and the heart pins that I offer all of the time. Because I'm doing everything in service of Ventura. So whatever your presence here inspires me, and I hope that I inspire you as well. So let us go ahead and just do this beautiful, beautiful quote one more time. We're going to do it as an affirmation. So please repeat after me. I live in the faith that there is a presence and a power greater than I am, that nurtures and supports me in ways I could not even imagine. Yes, and so it is. This is priceless. This is your work. Thank you very much. Let's pray. Poor John wanted to clap. It's okay. Oh, yeah, thank you. Thanks. All right. So we turn within and just trust and know that presence and that power that is greater than what we can imagine, that is so much greater. And we just rest in that infinite energy and know its goodness and know its worthiness and know that as we are part of that greatness, part of that worthiness, part of that beautiful darkness and light, part of the perfection and the imperfection, part of all of this beautiful, unconditional life that is love itself. And so we unify with that. We know its truth, we know its power, we know its presence, we know that it is living its life through us in new and wonderful ways every day. That it is easy for us, that something within us remembers to recognize how much we have through the power of grace. That something within us also remembers to live unconditionally, to recognize that every condition that we name negative is actually a gift in disguise, and to stay open to allow that power and presence, that pricelessness, to reveal itself to us. And that everything within us remembers also that we are doing important work here together, individually and as a community, and this work blesses the world around us. And so I'm just so grateful for this truth, so grateful for this teaching, so grateful to be here. I bless all paths to God. I bless churches, synagogues, temples, mosques, ashrams. I bless atheists and fundamentalists. I bless all beings, for all beings are a blessing. And with a heart that is so filled with gratitude and so filled with blessedness, I say thank you, Spirit, thank you, God, and I release these words into the divine mystery, and together we say, and so it is. I am so blessed, I am so blessed, I am so grateful for all that I have. I am so blessed, I am so blessed, I am so grateful, I am so blessed. Trusting these beautiful blessings that flow through us, let us create our offering with heart, mind, and being, knowing that giving is part of our sacred practice, and it is totally optional, and it is priceless. That whatever you give is perfect, and that it ripples out and blesses not only this community and the work that we do, but it goes around the world to bless other communities, other worthy organizations. And we breathe in and we breathe out and we practice the divine principle of circulating, giving with an open heart, giving with freedom, giving with joy and love. And in the spirit of that circulation, I invite you to please repeat after me. We trust in spirit. God is the giver and receiver of all that we are. We offer our gift. It is an outer expression of our inner abundance. Our gift blesses many and returns to us multiplied in miraculous ways. And so it is. Thank you. As the ushers are starting to do the offering, I just wanted to mention that since Michael Paul has been coming to sing for us, people have been asking me if he would sing opera. So I asked him to sing a song that has absolutely nothing to do with what I just talked about, but it is opera, so enjoy it. There you go. Unless, well, there's a bull part, right?
Yes.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
You could have shared that a little bit better.
Yeah, I could have, but I forgot. Yeah.
Should I say something about the bull?
Yeah, go ahead. Oh. I'll say something about the bull. So it's a Toreador song from Carmen. You probably know that. Yeah, it's good. Yeah, and when Michael and I first talked about it, I was like, how can I use that in a talk? And he's like, well, tell people to let go of their bull. Okay.
I just want to say, since I'm here at that time, I'm so happy to see that you are
All right. Talk about disrupting church, right? Isn't that awesome? Getting a Toreador song. All right, so let us do our affirmations. Oh, before that, I want to just announce that we've got refreshments. Go on through those doors there and get something tasty and lots of good stuff going on back there. It's great to see you, and please repeat after me. I am a center of love.
I am a center of love.
I am love.
I share love.
I serve love.
Thank you for my love.
Thank you for my life.
Thank you for my life.
And so it is.
And so it is.